2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
And welcome back to the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. This is your host, Jeff Ponce, back with my co-host, Dylan White. Dylan, you had a vacation week. I had a recovery week after I got back from Seattle. It's been a couple of weeks. A lot has happened. Draft has happened. Futures game happened. We've had some trades. We've had some call-ups. We've had some minor league promotions. We are days, week or so away from the trade deadline right now. There's a lot going on, Dylan. So with all that being said, we're not going to talk about any of it. We're going to talk about the Dynasty 600 update. We put that out a couple of weeks ago now, up on the site, so go check that out. Obviously, good work by yourself there. I was not involved in this particular update. This is all Dylan's handiwork. So I want to sort of quiz you on some of these names here and talk through some of the players that have moved up, some of the players that have jumped on and up in the 600. So once again, welcome to the show. You haven't spoke yet, so I'm going to shut the hell up.
Well, I was going to say, obviously, the most important news that happened was the Dynasty 600. But you missed that opportunity to say that, and so now I have to toot my own horn that's bigger than the MLB draft. It's been a lot has happened. I feel out of shape. I feel like I don't have my endurance underneath me. My legs are rubber. But I was telling you how the big news here is Ohtani is coming to Toronto on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, but now he's no longer pitching Friday because of the doubleheader that's happening on Thursday. So my poor Japanese mother is not going to be able to see him pitch as she had hoped. So she can still see him hit. So she can still see half the man he is.
Hey, maybe Toronto will pony up and, I don't know, somehow find a way to trade for him. I don't know how that happens, frankly. Covering that system, I don't know how that happens. But we can dream. We can dream right now, just in the future.
They just announced that apparently the Angels have pulled him from the trade market. That's the breaking news of the last hour.
I'm sure he's off the market now. If he was once on the market, if he was on the market and now off, I'm sure that's absolutely accurate. So that only tells me that he was on the market at one point for him to be off the market, unless he was never on the market. And that's the mean. So I want some clarification on that comment. I saw the same one. I think it was, but it was I keep on thinking of the wrong person. Who was it that he had that comment to? It was someone that interviewed him recently too.
Verducci, maybe?
It was Verducci, exactly. That's what it was. The name of this on the tip of my tongue, and I could not remember it. So, yeah, that was Verducci. But enough about Shohei Ohtani. Let's talk about the real showstopper here. That is the 600, which you thought I was going to forget. You thought I wasn't going to lead into that. Come on. That was my segue there, you know? We talked about a couple other things, you know? We saved the best for last, and then we keep it moving. Let's talk about some of the new additions here. I think there's a whole bunch. None of them are Bobby Brown. Nobody was in BBD. I'm making some old references that nobody gets unless they're over the age of 45. Jack Sawinski, Brian Wu, Leody Tavares, Ethan Salas, all inside of the top 200 now. These are guys that were not ranked. Certainly aren't our radars. I think different cases. You know, Sawinski was kind of an underrated prospect that had, you know, some good, you know, walk rates and some power and some speed, stuff that you could like. Wu was a guy that was hurt, you know, came back last year, pitched really well, pitched well in the fall league, and rocketed it up to the major leagues. I don't think anyone would have predicted that he would have been in the majors and pitching well this early. Tavares is a guy who had a ton of pedigree, was ranked very highly for a long time, was considered kind of a bust, kind of disappointment, still really young, having a good season. Salas, I think, is an easy one. I mean, Ethan Salas, like, we couldn't have anticipated in the offseason that he was going to skyrocket like this, especially a young teenage catcher doing the things that he's done at the plate, like not just behind it, but at the plate. So understand some of these, but with Sawinski in particular, he's inside the top 150. So talk to me a little bit about Sawinski, why I like him so much, And I guess, you know, because these are dynasty rankings, why you believe in him going forward.
Yeah, so I had Suwinski in basically all my dynasty leagues. He was super hot. I tried to sell high. No one wanted to buy. Then he stayed hot for even longer. And then he got cold. And then people came to me. And then I started trading him. So I actually regret moving him up so high because he's no longer on any of my teams. He has gotten kind of hot again, especially in OBP leagues. He just pulling it up now. I mean, he has a 131 WRC plus for the year, 21 home runs, seven stolen bases. So, you know, he's on pace for 30 home runs, say 10 stolen bases. He's 24, almost 25. So, I mean, for these ranks, I use obviously my own like projections. I'll take like other projection systems. I will like apply age curves, try to do like 3 year out. I'll even use a perception of like what the market is kind of saying as a little bit of a nudger up and down. And it's just Jack Suwinski just kept popping up. He just kept moving up on everything. There was no way I could drive him down. I just like what he's doing. Is the power is just so good. He had that slow stint for a couple of weeks, but it's like he's kind of heated back up. I haven't actually paid attention to the last week or so, but I mean, I still see him. You're hitting at the top of the lineup and stuff. So, yeah, he's just a good one there. Brian Wu, same idea. When I was looking at the projections and like how young he is and what he's going to be doing in a few years, over the next 3 years with a good team. It just, I'm all in kind of on Brian Wu. The fastball is, I mean, it maybe isn't getting the results it should, but it's like the exact modern fastball you want, as flat as you can get almost. I like all the pedigree and all that as well. So I probably jumped ahead by going to Wu after Suwinski, but I just couldn't stop talking about Wu.
No, I think that's perfect. You know, like I was going to throw it out there and say that you have Wu above Andrew Abbott, you know, among these rookie starters. You have him above Logan Allen. You have him above Emmett Sheehan and AJ Smith-Schauffer. So, and Mitch Keller actually too, right? So I think those are all like, that's pretty interesting to me. Looking at that and how you rank him, I sort of agree. I think that his secondary quality has been better than Sheehan. I think he's showed more starter traits than like Smith-Schauffer and some of these other guys. So Totally agree there. As for Leody, I don't think we could have anticipated that. What are your thoughts on Leody? And just, you know, are you going after him in certain leagues? Has he been a target? Because I still feel like he's a touch underrated in the public space.
Yeah, he's because the Ranger lineup has just been so great at top to bottom. Seager, Chaim being like one of the RBI leaders, Semien, of course, Adolis obviously being great. He's kind of been under the radar, Leody. He's quietly had like one of the stronger seasons. I have him in TGFBI, and it's just, you know, he gets speed. He always hits at the bottom of the lineup, which is a bummer, but he's hitting 277. He's got 11 homers, 10 stolen bases. So he has actually slowed down a bit. He was over 300 for a bit there, and like he was on a better home run stolen base pace. But he's the kind of guy who, if you have him, you really appreciate him. And if someone tries to get him off of you, you're like, no chance, because like I know what he's doing for me, and he's definitely underrated by the market. So it's kind of someone that you're not going to be able to get, or it's very difficult to get, because the people who have him are not moving him because he's still young. He's, I think, 24 as well, right? He's, yep, 24, younger than Suwinski by a month. Power, speed, plays good defense, so he's going to stay in that lineup. The lineup's not going to get any worse with Wyatt Langford coming. He may not hit at the top, but you know, he's setting the table from the bottom for the leadoff hitters. Like Josh Young, I didn't even mention Josh Young as part of that as well. So he's a guy that it was kind of me planting a flag here of, I recognize what his value has been thus far this year. And I want it known publicly that, you know, we see him.
Yeah, for sure. And thought it was moving on to some prospects here. We'll kind of move on. Adam Walcott, I think that makes a lot of sense. not weren't crazy aggressive with your Walcott rank at 247. Still pretty high considering he hasn't played, you know, that many games professionally, but has been obviously like extremely talented, and the performance has been great. Added in Chase Hampton at 278. Performance has been really good there. He pitched tonight. We're recording this. Added in Chase Mydroth, and you had him pretty higher than I would have him. I know I'm going to get some scorn for saying that publicly, but I don't know. I would like to talk through that one. Kind of interested in your thoughts. And you know, other prospects like Louis Lara, Ben Brown, and Louis Angel Acuña actually as well.
I thought you only want to talk about Mydroth. He was a challenging one. He seemed to start off really hot, then cooled, and then got hot again. And then, you know, there was all the spirited debate of York versus Mydroth, scouting versus stat line. And at the time I was doing it, he was still sustaining his performance. And it was sort of like, I mean, I can't deny what he's doing. The projection of what he's doing is compelling. And so I ended up putting him, where do I have him? Like 336. He's near Jonathan Aranda and Carson Williams. Actually, he's sandwiched. He's sandwiched by them. So maybe that is high. But Aranda's not going to have the greatest fantasy stats. He's going to have a good average, but he's not going to have the most power, not really steal any bases. Carson Williams has the power, may not have the batting average. He hasn't really done it, like proven it yet. So it's more of a pedigree thing and a projection of what we think he can do. So, you know, having Mydroth in there, I don't feel terrible about having him sandwiched there. He has slowed down substantially in the last week or two. So it probably looks bad in hindsight. Since June 2nd, 142 plate appearances. He has a 116 WRC plus in AA, so just a hair above average there.
That's about what his WRC plus is for the entirety. I mean, he's got a 118, so it's kind of in line.
So there you go. But I feel like his strikeouts have gone up and his walks have gone down, and he's not really putting up the counting stats either. He's at 3 home runs, 4 stolen bases in that time, 142 plate appearances. So like that projects to like 15 home runs, you know, 7 stolen bases, which is not the greatest. Batting average around 250. So yeah, he slowed down. Maybe he will make adjustments like he did earlier in the year where he did slow down and then came back again. So I'm not like shutting the door on him, obviously. The body of work this year has been good. It may be a bit aggressive. I mean, I have him ahead of Benintendi. That's just going down the Brady House.
I would have House way over my draw.
Yeah, that's what I figured. Jefferson Cuero, I have a bit lower. So, yeah, I mean, if I were to do them today, I'd probably swap those two, drop them down maybe 50 points or 50 ranks. But, you know, as anyone who puts these rankings together always say, you know, like don't take the face value ordinal number of 336 as being better than 338. Like they're basically the same. It's you're getting the relative weights, and you know, obviously you have to weigh the context of your league, the context of your team, are you in a win now mode, etc. When you're making these adjustments. This is kind of giving a good barometer for what I feel the market is and what the market should be for him, all things being equal.
Yeah, and he's had a really rough last month. 227, 292, 318. It's only 18 games, obviously, because of the break. But a 27.8% strikeout rate and a 4.2% walk rate over that 18-game stretch. That is un-Mydroth-like. So kind of something to watch there. Might just be a cold streak. Maybe he even is hurt. Who knows? We shall see. But, yeah. All right, that was an interesting one, of course. I wanted to bring that one up. Anyone else from these additions here that you kind of wanted to talk about, whether that's Will Benson or, you know, Luke Rayleigh, some breakouts there. Jaron Duran got added, of course. Jonathan Class A. Lane Thomas. Lane Thomas has been pretty good as well. So I don't know if there's any names there that stick out to you.
The Will Benson, Jaren Duran, and Lane Thomas are actually very difficult because at the time, which would probably be 3 weeks ago, Will Benson and so Duran, they got Duvall came back. And so Duran started losing playing time. And so I thought, you know, the honeymoon was over and he was not going to be putting up the massive numbers he was doing. And since then he has hit at the top of the order again and Duvall's barely playing and he's Duran is stealing bases and hitting with power. And he's someone that I regret dropping in my redraft leagues. And so I wasn't sure, like, I know he's good. I know he's producing and I know he would, if he was given the playing time, I just wasn't sure he was going to get the playing time. And, that's why I wasn't really sure where to put him. I regret putting him at 312. Will Benson, same thing. Everything underneath the hood was showing that he was good and he just wasn't having the opportunity then. And like, he had just started to get hot. And was he going to keep it up? Was he going to do what he was showing that he could do in AAA? Because he had great numbers in AAA the last couple of years. Not chasing as much. Contact was great. The exit velocities obviously are great. I had Will Benson at the beginning of the year when he first came up with the Reds and he did not do well. And then I believe he was sent down. I dropped him then and he came back up and doing what he's doing now, which is incredible. And he hadn't done what Will Benson's doing yet. And so I wanted to put him high and I have him ahead of Jaren Duran. I have him in the 200s, 279. And so it was again, a thing where I'm like, I think he should be higher, but he's not really showing it yet. And it could backfire. So you have to kind of split the difference. Lane Thomas, obviously doing excellently. I did a tweet a couple of weeks ago. It was like last calendar year, comparing George Springer and Lane Thomas, and they're like virtually identical stats. 120 WRC plus, everything else basically matching exactly the same. The problem is Lane Thomas is older. He hasn't done it for a very long time, and I don't know how much of a dynasty asset he is. I don't know how many people are going to try to trade for Lane Thomas. If you're in a win now league, yeah, he's a hot commodity and he's being traded. But if you're like rebuilding, you're not really trading for Lane Thomas. So I couldn't really abide having him that high. I don't really know what his 3-year value is going to be. He's not very good on defense, so it's all hitting. And, you know, some of these teams that are in the hunt, like real major league teams who are in the hunt, maybe can't afford to have a bad outfielder defensively. And so he's kind of stuck as in a bad lineup. And he's getting the playing time because he's on a bad team. So I couldn't really foresee sort of a long runway of dynasty production for Lane Thomas as it is. So I have him 377. It's probably too low based on his production right now, but I think, you know, it's going to bear out in 3 years if that was
sure.
Probably a good spot.
Yeah, I agree there as well. And there was a resurgent JD Martinez making his way into the middle of the list as well, I see.
Yeah. I mean, I was worried about JD Martinez coming into this year. I have him in a couple spots and he's just been incredible for the Dodgers there, full-time DH. I think I have him actually lower than other sites have him. I have him 258. I mean, he's at any time he can retire. At any time the cliff,
yeah, sure,
hit the exactly. Cliff. So, like, it's these dynasty ranks are very tricky because you have to balance so many things and try to find, you know, what's a good sweet spot. So,
absolutely. Let's take a quick break here. When we get back, we're going to talk about some of the risers, some of the guys that jumped way up the list that were already ranked. Some really exciting names coming up after this.
I took 2 years of Spanish in high school. I took 3 more quarters of Spanish in college. And here I am. I work at a baseball publication, a baseball website, where speaking Spanish would be incredibly useful for my job. And I found that I don't retain almost any of it. But now I've got a different way to do this, a better way, with Babbel. Recently, I've been learning to speak Spanish with Babbel, and you can too. Because with Babbel, you can start speaking a new language in just 3 weeks. It's the second best way to learn a language. The best way is through immersion, where you live where the language is spoken natively and everyone's using it every day. But that's not possible for everyone. It's not possible for me. So what's the second best way to learn a language? Babbel, because you can start speaking a new language in just 3 weeks. 1 in 5 Americans have learned a new language on their bucket list. I'm one of those 1 in 5. You can check it off this summer. Why Babbel? Because it works. Instead of paying hundreds of dollars for a private tutor or fooling yourself with language apps that are little more than games, Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are designed by over 150 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. One of the things I love about it is it gives you the language in a variety of ways. You see it visually, you hear it, but the one that I like the most is Babbel's advanced speech recognition tells you if you're saying the words properly. And if you're not, it helps you. And that's key for me. With Babbel, you can learn everything you need to have real-world conversations, from vocabulary words to culture, and all it takes is 10 minutes a day. So try Babbel. Here's our special limited-time deal for our listeners to get you started right now. Get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our podcast listeners at babbel.com/BA. That's 55% off at babbel.com/BA. That's BABBEL.com/BA. Rules and restrictions may apply.
I love staying busy, especially during the summer, going to games, concerts, shows, whatever is happening in my area. But what I don't love is making plans ahead of time. So shopping for tickets just got a little bit easier with TickPick, the original no-fee ticket marketplace that brings you the best prices for all the events that you love. And now TickPick is partnering with Zip, so you can shop now and pay later. Zip allows you to shop at TickPick and split your payment into easy installments. Visit TickPick.com and use promo code ZIP20, ZIP20, for $20 off your first purchase of $199 or more with Zip. Zip can only be used for U.S. purchases, and Zip may charge a fee at checkout. Certain merchant, product, goods, and service restrictions apply. See Zip's terms of service at www.zip.co-us. Loans through the Zip app are originated by WebBank, except for Zip-originated loans in Colorado, Nevada, Massachusetts, and Maryland.
And we're back. All right, Dylan. We're going to talk some risers here. I know we already mentioned one name in Emmett Sheehan. One that really rose way up list, 409 spots. He's within your top 90, actually. That is Matt McLean. I was actually talking to his brother Nick a couple days ago at the Cape Cod League All-Star Games when they had interviewed before. So we knew each other a little bit, but good catching up with him. He's the highest ranked sort of like big riser, I would say, here, you know, other than Junior Caminero, but he only moved 188 spots as opposed to 409. So talk to me about Matt McLean and what you like. Obviously, the performance has been great.
I had him ranked that high because I knew you'd be talking to his brother, and I thought it'd be awkward if
you got approached,
what's up? Why is he
too? You totally brought it up, yeah.
I mean, well documented. I was worried about Matt McLean coming into the year. He's at the top of the AAA RoboScout leaderboard, so that was bad perception on my part coming into the year. He's just been outstanding in AAA, outstanding in the majors. Him and Ellie obviously are going to make the Cincinnati fans very happy for a long time. 2020 bat, Matt, middle of the lineup. The lineup's just going to get better, going to get stronger. Great ballpark, playing up the middle. Like, everything is looking up for Matt McLean. So I was a bit surprised, 87. I'm like, well, that does seem high. But just looking at it, like, that you can't put him any lower. That is the spot he belongs. I kind of feel like you can't lower him, even though he hasn't really shown it for a sustained period of time. But like, this is the kind of area where I think he belongs. He's ahead of Carlos Correa, Kyle Schwarber. He's in the same spot. Max Fried, who's injured, Cedric Mullins, and again, this was 3 weeks ago. This is before he's had another 3 weeks of great production for an excited club. So
sure.
You know, if I were to do it today, I'd probably have him maybe 60 or 70. It's the type of thing I like. It's power speed, good batting average, good team, good lineup, good ballpark in a tough position, like playing a demanding defensive position and doing it well. So he's a guy that I would be targeting if I could, but I'm sure no one's going to trade him to you for a cheap price.
Yeah, and he has some runway, which I think is, future years, future 5 to 6-7 year production window, which I think people, when they're buying, you know, obviously that's valued very highly by sellers and buyers, of course. Another guy that moved way up the list, Louis Matos in the majors, not seeing the same success that Matt McLean has seen, but still young. The performance, obviously, throughout the minors this year was excellent. Talk to me a little bit about Matos. Matos.
Yeah, same idea. Guy I was worried about coming into the year, someone who I wasn't too optimistic on, and then he just crushed it all year. Was showing power speed, showing batting average, showing great discipline, great eye, great hit tool, I guess is the way to put it. Giants called him up. He hasn't done what we'd hoped, what he's showing he would do, but like my projections and the other projection system still have him doing well over the next, you know, over his career. He's still extremely young. I like the Giants are being aggressive. Like they also just called up Marco Luciano today. Patrick Bailey obviously has done well. Casey Schmidt has had a large role on the team. So he's a guy, this is more betting on the future, even though he hasn't really shown it yet. I had him 136. I have him just ahead of Justin Verlander. I mean, I kind of see that. I could see how that would work. Someone who is trying to win would trade for Justin Verlander, and they'd have to give up a good future bat for that. And so that's Luis Matos. So I don't think it's egregious. It's probably in hindsight, like again, 3 weeks later, because things change so fast. Maybe it's a bit high, but I believe in Luis Matos, and I would be trading for him if I can, especially I would now, because like I said, he hasn't really actualized what we believe he can be. And so now is maybe a good time to get him as an owner, maybe a bit skittish saying, I don't know if he's ever going to do it. So now may be a good time to target him.
I like this next name because I feel like this guy has had so many lives as a player in fantasy. Is that the right way to put it? And that's Jorge Soler. He has been the hotshot prospect that that had all the runway in the world. He's been the biggest bust in the world. He's been this huge comeback story. He's disappeared again and then come back in a big way this season. You got Soler up to 209. Talk to me what you like about Jorge.
Yeah, he's hitting second in the Marlin lineup and has basically all year. He has 24 home runs. So that's, 35 or more home runs he's going to have by the end of the year. He's a guy like Leody Taveras where I have him on a number of teams. And so I'm actually seeing it play out. And I'm so close to seeing like every week he's just consistently putting in the production. And I'm like, well, okay, this is someone that is clearly performing and is doing a great job. So he was at the time, like one of the top home run hitters. I'm not sure where he is now. I know Otani obviously has blown past him, but at the time he was one of the biggest sluggers. He was in the middle of the lineup playing every day as a DH, I believe too. So he wasn't going to get injured. And so he was always going to play. And just having a 40 home run bat perennially for the next couple of years, I believe he's only 31, I believe. He should be able to do that as a DH for multiple years and have, kind of carve out a Nelson Cruz in his heyday / JD Martinez that we just talked about. So, 30 home run bat. He plays enough of the outfield to qualify an outfield year after year. So it's just these are the unsung heroes, right? Where it's not the sexy name, but if you can get, 30 home runs or, 15/20 performance from, Asdrubal Cabrera or, that type of player who isn't the sexy name, these are the tickets for victory and success in Dynasty League. So again, I wanted to, kind of make it known that this is a quality producer and contributor to your team that should be ranked accordingly.
I find him to be fascinating as a player. So yeah, for sure. I mean, he's somebody that's just, like I said, had so many, so many lives in baseball at this point, and he's not even all that old. So kind of interesting. Couple of Tigers names here that I see were big movers. Colt Keith at 157 Kerry Carpenter at 363, Justin Henry Malloy at 367. All these guys were on the list to start the season. They all moved 220 to 230 spots up the rankings. Talk to me about this trio, and is the future brighter in Detroit?
I think so. I think the future is brighter. Spencer Torkelson has started to turn it on this year. Riley Green, before he got injured, and now he's back, is still kind of producing at a level that we're approaching the level of Riley Greenism. He's been an active target in many of my dynasty leagues because he's still so young and doing well. Colt Keith and Kobe Mayo are the top two AA RoboScout names by far. It's just Colt Keith has just been great all year. He's now AAA, obviously, but he looks like, you know, 25 home run bat, good batting average. Maybe not in a great defensive home. He'll probably end up at first base, I would guess. But, you know, add him to that lineup. And obviously they picked Max Clark as well. I do like the Tiger lineup. I do like their pitching staff. I think that the Tigers are pretty good. And Kerry Carpenter has been very good too, unsung as well. He hits in the middle of the lineup against righties, batting cleanup or so. He's had a pretty big couple weeks as well. I do like the Tigers. Justin Henry Malloy has been consistent all year. He hasn't really put up monster numbers, but he looks like a good batting average, 20 to 25 home run bat. I think they have him in left field now, so I think they're trying to, you know, make sure that they can get him into a major league lineup with them to hit with these other young hitters I've just been mentioning. So I do like the Tigers. I have Colt Keith the highest, like you said, 157. I think he's clearly the best of those three. Kerry Carpenter, as well as he's done, people are not really buying in yet, as I can see it. He is a strong side platoon mostly, and that kind of scares people off because they want full-time at-bats. Justin Henry Malloy hasn't been called up, so they're both in the mid-300s. But these are assets that I like, I've targeted, and I actually have in some of my teams. So I'm walking the walk, walking the talk. I'm putting my mouth where the money is.
You got that reverse. You're big in on Xavier Edwards. Talk to me about your Xavier Edwards love.
Yes. So Xavier Edwards in AAA, especially in the last month or so, has been outstanding. He is, I'm calling it up right now, in his last 190 plate appearances, he has a less than 4% strikeout rate. He has a 369 batting average, 411 OBP, 471 slugging, 3 home runs, 20 stolen bases. He projects to hit, you know, 280 as like one of the highest projected batting average bases on this performance. WRC plus will be over 100. If he's stealing 20 in AAA, in 200 plate appearances, he's going to steal, you know, 30 in the major leagues. We always knew he's a slap hitter, yeah. who will steal bases and not hit that much for power, but you know, he's got a bit of pop in his stick showing so far, at least. He's in Miami. If he comes up, he is a guy I'm watching closely for when he gets called up for my redraft teams, because I think he will provide good batting average and stolen bases, and there aren't that many options like that available on the wire. So when he gets called up, I think he's going to be a popular target, and he's definitely going to be a high value target for me. Sure. It was a thing where I was surprised at how well he was doing. All year he's been doing well. And I just think because of the recent high performance, he's going to be called up by the Marlins, who, you know, they called up Dane Myers, who was also, once he got hot in AAA, they did the same thing, and he's been given runway as well. Obviously that was due to injury with Jazz. But, you know, maybe the same sort of thing will happen. They see the success that Dane Myers is having, so they'll bring up Xavier Edwards. So I'm looking forward to seeing what he does. Samad Taylor hasn't done it when he came up. Johan Rojas so far hasn't really done it. But these high stolen base guys, Tyrone Blanco, especially in redraft, could be could be high value commodities. And he's still pretty young. He's 23, Xavier Edwards. So, you know, he's going to play for a while if he comes up. So basically showing that he can get a good batting average using a steal bases, especially in the stolen base environment. And so I think he's actually underrated because the post hype idea has fatigued a lot of people.
And he's still only 23. So yeah. I think there's definitely, I see the upside for the contact, the batting average, plus the speed. And, you know, the Marlins lineup is all of a sudden starting to look maybe a little bit more interesting over the next couple of years as some of these guys can turn a corner and start to turn it on in the major leagues. It's really that's the final frontier or final question for Edwards there as he's mastered AAA. I think he's got a 5% strikeout rate, like a 10% walk rate. So,
yeah. And Jesus Sanchez. Sorry to interrupt, but Jesus Sanchez, I think, left the game early today with a leg injury or something. So maybe there's an opening right now as we speak.
Perhaps. There we go. It could be prescient. Let's talk about a couple of arms here. In Cade Horton, Jacob Mizorowski. Mizorowski at 290, Horton at 297. They both moved up about an equal amount of spots, 213 for Mizorowski, 214. For Cade Horton, so they were ranked similarly coming into the year, and I just think based on the performance, I'm going to guess, and the stuff, the reports, the underlying numbers, everything's kind of there with both these guys. Maybe less starter question marks or reliever risk with Cade Horton than Mizorowski. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think everything you said there is true. I think just the scouting reports, the performance, all that obviously has elevated their ranking. I do think Cade Horton probably has more better chance at starter than Mizorowski, but Mizorowski was just so nasty. It just looks so good, even in the futures game, especially in the futures game. It's just that they haven't. Yeah, I think they're a tier below like the Emmett Sheehans and the Brian Woos and the guy Mason Miller, Bryce Miller, these guys who've come up and are performing, quote unquote, Bobby Miller, guys who are in the majors already. So there's more to dream on in these Cade Horton and Jacob Mizorowski's. So, and they haven't done it yet. They're, you know, a year away, quote unquote. So they can't be as high, but I have them in the 200s. I think they're, they're very valuable commodities. They're going to excel in the majors, even if it's just in a high leverage relief role. Like I think Mizorowski, worst case, is going to be a lights out closer. And that's valuable too, especially if you get your Josh Haders or your Edwin Diaz's and you're kind of set in dynasty.
I still kind of like him as a starter, to be honest. I'm a big fan. I like both these guys. Would want him rostered everywhere. And I'm going to sort of bring this up now, maybe as we wrap up a little bit. As far as looking at some of these pitching prospects, particularly college guys that are a little bit older, like Mizorowski, like Horton, we've seen a lot of these guys get called up with an accelerated timeline this season. I feel like we're seeing more and more young arms. Some of that might be being pushed due to injury, but I also think that teams are getting more aggressive with prospects, and they seemingly have been more aggressive with pitching prospects this year. Certain teams in particular, of course, but has that changed your perspective on the risk associated with pitching prospects when you're seeing a lot of these older college arms with big stuff, good performance in the upper minors, get called up quickly? Does it take away some of the risk for you? I'm wondering.
It probably does. It probably does. Like, because of the accelerated timeline, like you're saying, you don't have to wait as long. There's not as much opportunity for a lost year, or at least that's perception that, you know, you're going to have your Jake Eater is going to have to go under the knife. And so you lose a year. And so do you keep him on your team or not? So now it's sort of like, you don't have to wait 3 years. You only have to wait 1.5, 2 years. So probably does. Flip side is these guys have accelerated so fast, like Mason Miller, Bryce Miller. Yeah. We had them as prospects on our lists. They probably weren't in the 100 at the time. Andrew Rabbit was not in the 100. You know, Chase Hampton wouldn't be in the 100. Connor Phillips wouldn't have been in the 100 to start the year. And now
no one was ranking Hampton coming into the year. Yeah,
exactly. And now they're in these top 100. So like anyone, quote unquote, anyone at any time can just pop up. So it's, you know, maybe you wait and play the like be the quickest on the wire game instead of investing in, you know, four arms that you hope will make it. I don't know. Maybe it's changing that strategy of trying to find pitchers. But I do think your original question, does it change the risk profile? I think it does. If major league teams are showing that they're going to bring up their young and be aggressively promoting their young pitchers, I think that absolutely has to make them be a quote unquote safer investment because you don't have to wait as long for them to brew in the minors and have things go wrong.
Yeah. No, I agree. I feel like I feel more confident in the guys who have big stuff. We have some background underlying numbers to look at now. And the way that those guys that we've targeted based on some of these numbers over the last couple of years have performed, Spencer Strider is one of those guys, frankly. So it's like, you kind of feel good about it, you know, and you feel like, all right, well, I think I'm going to get at least like a very usable starter in a variety of formats. So yeah, I agree. I feel like pitching prospects all of a sudden seem a little bit less risky, which is probably foolhardy to feel that way. They'll probably break my heart again, but it feels like we're seeing more guys come up, get some success, even the guys that are getting beat up a little bit. At least you're getting that year out of the way, and then they're kind of like, you know, get to make their adjustments, because I feel like rookie pitchers in general, it's always kind of a crapshoot in terms of what the performance is going to be from start to start in their first time through the league. But it also starts that timeline, at least from my perspective, of that first like year and a half in the major leagues and getting acclimating, getting coached up, getting better nutrition, but, you know, better access to a variety of recovery methods. It's just, I think that stuff starts to take shape, you know, sort of after that first 200 innings or so in the major leagues. And as guys get to that point, you typically, and we're seeing it now, I think with some of the rookies from last year, you're starting to see some of these guys take that step forward now that they've made these adjustments and they, you know, they feel more like professionals. Because I am sure it's one thing for a position player to meld into the bigger picture, the lineup, the defensive, lineup, et cetera, versus being the guy sitting there on the mound, starting games, you know, every play starts with you putting the ball in, you know, into the zone or out of the zone, but just, you know, making that throw. That's got to be incredible pressure. And it's the preparation, the game planning, it's all stepped up. And things that work, we're seeing this with Emmett Sheehan, things that work in Double A, like his four-seam fastball, that does not necessarily work in the big leagues. So you have to figure out ways to make adjustments and make yourself better. So I do think it's interesting that, you know, they're coming up, I feel a little bit more safe, but at the same time, I think it's because the timeline is accelerated. It feels a lot better when they're in the major leagues. And if there is an injury, it sounds awful, but if there is an injury, at least you can put them on your IL.
You know. I wonder if, like, you bringing up Sheehan, I wonder how much of that is at play MLB teams, where they're like, you know, let's see if it plays in the majors and let's just bring them up right now. Is that flat fastball? Are they unable to catch up to it? Are they swinging under it? Major league hitters. And let's just see right now. And if not, if they are hitting it, then, you know, we know that he has stuff to work on. And so we can target those things instead of, you know, they wait a year and they think, okay, he's ready now. And then they find out he actually isn't, because all this time that flat fastball was able to be hit. Just one other point too, is like for dynasty owners, it's like you've seen Spencer Strider untouchable. You're not going to get Spencer Strider in a dynasty league. And then like Shane McClanahan, who kind of came out of nowhere, that's in quotes as well, did well. And now he is like the number two untouchable pitcher. Yuri Perez is being talked as like the number three dynasty pitcher in some circles. So like people are seeing, dynasty owners are seeing that these pitchers can become like the jewels of the league. And untouchable. And so they want to take their shots too. So like, you want to make sure, like, is Brian Wu going to be that guy? Is Mason Miller going to be that guy? I got to grab these guys as they come up. Bobby Miller, I got to trade for Taj Bradley. All these young pitchers who are doing well in the minors, have the pedigree, and that are being called up early are huge value targets in dynasty leagues and are valued very, very, very highly.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a good place to sort of leave it. great conversation. Go and check out the Dynasty 600. All of our content. We're going to have Robo Scout back this weekend. We filled it in with lots of Cape Cod League All-Star Game content just for you, Dylan. I know you like
it. I love it.
Well, as for Jeff, as for Dylan, we're out of here. This was the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast.